music from Sierra. Hope for the Hopeless, it's called. It's 12 minutes after the hour. It's a Wednesday, and so we're about to enter into a conversation with Doug Greenwald. Doug's a senior teaching fellow and executive director at Preserving Bible Times. Normally, we talk to Doug from Columbia, Maryland, just outside Washington. That's where the ministry is based. But today, he's down in the Dallas area. Doug, good morning. What are you doing in Texas?
Well, first off, I have to say, howdy.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Context lovers, howdy.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I like that hat you got on there.
Actually, I'm told that howdy is what people from Texas A&M say. I don't know what the people from University of Texas say.
How'd you do?
How you all doing? Probably.
Mm-hmm. But, how all y'all? They did. I think they say all y'all, which is the plural of y'all.
I'll leave that to the linguists.
Okay. All right.
I am down here because I've been asked to be the teacher in residence at the Frisco Bible Church in North Dallas. And Frisco, Texas, these days is probably the hottest city in the United States. Hot meaning economically speaking.
Oh, really?
The place is just exploding. Toyota has recently relocated from California to Plano, Texas. Mm-hmm. Liberty Mutual just announced that they're relocating everything to Plano, Texas, which is just, you know, one suburb south of Frisco. Housing prices are skyrocketing. New people are moving in. And I spoke at a men's breakfast just this past Saturday. And there were four people from Toyota, you know, just within two tables of me. So it's an exciting place to be. The church I'm going to be teaching in, Frisco Bible, is a 10%er church, and only 1% of the churches in the United States are 10%er churches. Now, I need to explain what that means.
Please do.
It means you grow at 10% a year from conversions, you know, not transfers from one church to another. Okay. And that makes for an exciting environment when you have that many new believers coming into the kingdom every year. So this is really a fascinating place to be at this moment in time. And I'm going to be teaching for five Sundays and five Tuesday nights, you know, on a couple of miniseries.
We've talked a number of times about what Doug does at Preserving Bible Times. And aside from writing books and studying and sharing his time with us on Wednesday mornings, Doug travels the country. And in fact, the world, regular trips, although it's been interrupted now for security reasons, but trips to Israel, trips to Italy, teaching trips, and he visits churches all across the country, bringing his Bible Alive weekend to congregations. And but this is a little different pattern than I've seen from you. I think it's good because you're a soldier for the faith. You're out there doing hard work because context isn't always well received, and. And do you have like a suit of armor you wear to these places?
If I use my marketing language, you know, because I was in sales and marketing for 32 years, it's a product that very few people know even exists. And if they know it exists, most of them still feel, who cares?
Yeah. And so, that's until they hear it and then they care.
Well, exactly. And then when the lights go on, it's like, holy cow, where has this been? How did we miss this? Mm-hmm. How come we've never been exposed to this? Where can we get more? So Sunday, I had I think 30 people in a class. And two nights later, the word sort of started to spread. And on my Tuesday night class, it doubled to 60. And
wow.
People are still spreading the word, so you know, we'll see what happens. But it's really exciting. Sometimes, well, I'd say it's often, it's like pouring water on a dry sponge. People just can't get enough of it. And what's fun about that is people get excited. I never knew that. There is so much there. And what comes with that is a renewed enthusiasm to study God's word. Because they kind of thought they mastered it, and now they realize there's a whole new plateau that they never knew existed that they want to ascend to. And so it's exciting when you do that.
I first met Doug, must have been 2005, 2006, something back there, when he came to our neck of the woods for a Bible Alive weekend. And I was at a local Christian station, and Wes Trucker, you remember Wes? Brought Doug over to the station, and we did an interview to help promote the program. And I was so intrigued just from talking to Doug in the radio station, I went over and took in part of the seminar. And people were riveted on what Doug was doing. And he had slides and the DVD, and the rest is history, because it dawned on me how important this information is and should be heard in churches everywhere across the country. And so I want listeners to know that they can contact Preserving Bible Time. Now, I know your calendar is probably pretty full, but Doug does this. He'll come to where you are and just light up your church with either a Bible Alive weekend and their various topics at various times of the year. But Doug, I don't remember when you've spent a month in a place before. This is something new for you, isn't it?
Well, it really is. This may be the greatest teaching marathon I think I've ever done. Mm-hmm. I spoke Saturday morning to men. I taught twice on Sunday morning. I taught Monday night. Tuesday morning, yesterday, I did a videotaping for the Lion and Lamb Ministry in North Dallas here, and that should air in mid-April. They interviewed me on Why Context Matters. It was really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Last night I taught, and this morning I'm going to be teaching. So, you know, whatever that is, 5 or 6 90-minute sessions. Mm-hmm. In 3 laps days, and I'm going to do that 5 straight weeks.
I want to ask you a little bit about the material you're presenting, because you've got a huge shindig coming up in June in Michigan, and that's something that David and I hope to attend yet. Are you using material from that? Is this like in preparation for that? Because that's a major undertaking.
Yeah, that's the Jesus in His Context Summer Conference. It's a national conference. First time ever that several really proficient teachers of biblical context, hands-on teachers of biblical context, are going to come together in one place at one time to share their respective insights on Jesus and the Gospels. And for me, this is like a dream comes true. This is truly exciting. It is really extraordinary. It's the Summit Conference of Biblical Context, or the World Series of Biblical Context. I'm not even sure I can find the right metaphor or analogy for it. But a few things I'm going to be teaching in that conference that I have taught before, but most of what I'm going to hear, because I'm going to be a listener too for the others, is going to be new to me. And so, you know, what the audience probably won't appreciate is as the six of us teachers share for 3 days on different parts of Jesus in His Context, where it's continuing education for us, the faculty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's truly exciting as well. It's going to be exciting to share that with whoever wants to come. So I expect to emerge out of that time in June with a really expanded portfolio of more things to teach.
Now, that's limited to 500 people, isn't it, in June, Michigan
conference? Well, it is, and that's a kitchen feeding limitation that mm-hmm. we're dealing with here. And I heard the other day that in the first 4 days, 30 people already signed up. So mm-hmm. It's kicked off at a nice pace, probably be 100 by the end of the month. And the Lord willing, it will be a phenomenal event. But to get back to where I am now, as you've indicated, I travel the country, and the vast majority of time I will spend a weekend in a church. Sometimes I will spend up to 3 or 4 or 5 days in a certain setting if I'm doing an intensive teaching, like with teaching directors of community Bible study or Young Life area directors or something like that. But this is a chance to develop a relationship with a church over several weeks. So, for example, I saw some people last night when I taught biblical geography that were in the Sunday school class on Sunday and were at the men's breakfast on Saturday. And in 4 days, I've met them 3 times already.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have a familiarity with each other, and we're joshing back and forth. And their freedom of dialogue and interacting and questions is just opening up as we go. So I'm really looking forward to see how this whole dynamic plays out, because this is a good chance to develop some mini relationships with a goodly number of people in a church setting, which normally I don't get the opportunity to do.
You know, these are like rumblings. These are like ripples on a pond, because you have just initiated the IBC. Tell us about that.
Well, I've long dreamed of creating something called the Institute of Biblical Context. In fact, you can find it on the PBT website. It probably goes back several years now as a notion. Mm-hmm. I finally found somebody who thought it was a fantastic notion and said, let's do it. And I won't take you through the details, but miraculously, all kinds of things just sort of fell into place. And the location is Western Michigan. And we're bringing together five, maybe six teachers who have all led trips to Israel. That's what I mean by hands-on. Okay, I'm not a fan of somebody who writes a textbook on some aspect of biblical context, but really hasn't walked the land or touched the land extensively, and more particularly taught on the land. So all of us have taught on the land, which means we've been exposed to things and we've learned things in Israel that you just can't learn academically, you know, here stateside. So everyone has had that experience. And not only that, they are really good teachers. You know, one of the requirements I had is not only do you know your stuff, but are you good in front of an audience? Can you engage people? Do you have a really good sense of humor? Can you communicate? And this faculty can. For example, one of them, Dr. Gary Berg, is the world's expert on John. And he's on the faculty of Wheaton, the Wheaton College and Graduate School. He's just a world-class expert, written dozens and dozens of books. Our expert on biblical geography is Dr. Cindy Parker, who's on the faculty at the Theological Bible Seminary in North Philadelphia. Every summer, she goes to Jerusalem and teaches three-week mini courses on biblical geography for Christian college students who come in for the summer. And so she's probably done 40 of those. She's an adjunct professor at Jerusalem University College and is just a wonderful communicator. And it's, you know, I have to say it, it's interesting and really enjoyable to hear and experience the feminine perspective on biblical geography, you know, not just the masculine. So we've got a nice balance of young and old people, female and male. And the common denominator is we not only all love biblical context, but we've taught it on the land in Israel. And we are all incredibly excited just to get together for ourselves, because we want to say, well, what do you think happened that brought Mary and Joseph from Nazareth to Bethlehem? How do you think they traveled? Were they in a caravan? Were they not? How did they spend their nights, separate or together? There's this all kinds of contextual issues that we wonder about, that we can hardly wait to see what somebody else's perspective is. Because what tends to happen in this world of biblical context, it's real easy to be a lone ranger. And you do your own thing. And very seldom do you interact with other people. Unfortunately, part of that is because everyone does trips to Israel. And so everyone sort of views the other person as sort of a quasi-competitor. And I told people, you got to get past that one, okay? We're not going to talk about our trips when we get together as the several teachers. We're just going to share our insights. And what's really interesting is Dr. Gary Berg, again, this world's expert in John, said to me when I invited him, this is really interesting. I'd love to hear what other people think and say about some of these passages. So we're going to do different things. We're all going to, on the first day, we're all going to have our own plenary topics that we want to discuss. And one that I'm working on, and I'm going to need months to get it done, but to do about a 60-minute piece, probably the second item on the topical agenda after we kick the conference off, the history of biblical context, or say another way, the context of context.
Yeah, we've talked about that here in the last couple of weeks. That itself is fascinating.
Oh, you know, it is.
Where did it go? When did it disappear?
And how did it die? Why did it stay buried for so long? Who started to resurrect it? How did that get quenched? Mm-hmm. How did it get resurrected again? How did it start to emerge? And the reality of it is, just in the last 20 years or so, has this notion of integrated biblical contextual restoration of a passage even been exposed to Western evangelicalism. It's like cutting edge. It's like the paint hasn't even dried on it yet. It is so fresh. It is so new. It's a whole new paradigm. Actually, it's an old paradigm that we've rediscovered. I always try to be careful about that. We're not inventing anything new here. We're just rediscovering what was going on in the first two decades of the early church, when most of Christianity was Jewish, and they understood implicitly all the context that went with that. So this is truly exciting. It is groundbreaking. And to get back to your original question, when that's done, I personally, selfishly, would hope to have tons of brand new material to teach and dozens and dozens and dozens of new insights to graft into what I've been teaching for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting to me, and that's what keeps things fresh and new.
Well, my hope is that the Institute of Biblical Context will be able to then reach a good many more churches across the country once this initial seminar is done, and just the contacts within the industry, if you will, within the evangelical church will bloom.
And well, I already have a template in mind for how to regionalize this. I don't know whether the Lord will bless that. I don't know whether the opportunities will arise, but I've had some preliminary discussions with a series of churches in Phoenix, for example, that they're thinking of coming to check it out this June in Western Michigan. Mm-hmm. If they like what they see, to seriously entertain sponsoring this in Phoenix. And I'd also love to see somebody pick that up in Orlando so that in different parts of the country, we can share this with people. Mm-hmm. And the faculty has sort of been picked in such a way that the majority of them are portable, meaning, you know, they can go to different places at different times and do this sort of thing because they're not wedded to, you know, being in a classroom and having to see students every day and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I've got some noodling in the back of my mind, but we'll just have to see what the Lord does with this.
You know, this is a new frontier, too, because getting various and disparate churches to work together on anything is like pulling teeth, I've learned from my perspective up here. And you've already been engaged by a group of churches in Wichita. So this could help establish a pattern, too, where churches in the larger community get together and bring you in for your presentations.
Yeah, what that actually is a number of communities, and Phoenix is one of them, have ministerial associations. And different kinds of ministerial associations, but particularly the more mega churches that have the multi-campuses and all that kind of thing, they have their own ministerial association, and they tend to be fairly weak on Christian education and ministerial exposure to issues of context. So, you know, there's a double agenda here. It's not only to expose it to the pew, but also to start to provide continuing education for pastors of certain types of churches in Western evangelicalism that they've probably either missed or never been exposed to. So there's multiple layers to that rationale.
Well, and not just churches, but also seminaries. How do you reach them?
You can't. That's mission impossible.
It's got to be the other way around, huh?
There are actually, I know of only two seminaries in the United States that teach a course on biblical geography. That sort of says something right there.
That's astounding.
Yeah, it is. It is the Bible and the land, you know. And Cyril, the first bishop of Jerusalem in 348 A.D., now that's a long time ago, 348 A.D., said this: the land is the fifth gospel. I mean, it's not a secret that it's the Bible and the land. It's just only in Western evangelicalism that we've managed to cut that baby in half. Even Solomon wouldn't do that. And, you know, it's been long separated and long dormant, and that's part of what we're trying to rekindle an awareness of and then stoke a passion for, to reunite the Bible and the land to get beyond this Western one-dimensional way of understanding many of these passages and to see them robustly in their three-dimensional Jewish village, agrarian, first century, Near Eastern setting. And when those passages come alive, as you know, because we've done this through the years, it can often take your breath away.
Mm. Now, how important, how significant does it make your DVD series? Because that was really the genesis of Preserving Bible Times was videotaping from the air virtually the whole nation of Israel at a time when you could do that.
Well, it still is very relevant. It's a marvelous resource for teaching biblical geography. It's a marvelous resource to use for teaching the historical passages of the Bible, because you can go there and do a freeze frame and teach. Like last night, I used one of our DVDs, and I did a clip over flying over the north in the Hula Valley on the foothills of Mount Hermon, and I was showing them how lush everything is and green because of the soil and because of the rainfall. Then I took another clip and I went 60 miles further south to the hill country of Samaria and showed them the topographical differences, the contour differences, the soil differences, the deep valleys and hillside where Joshua hid the country out in its early years after the Joshua and Ai, you know, experiences. And then I took them 60 miles further south to Beersheba, where Abram first hung his hat, and showed him how barren, how Spartan, how dry that is. And with those three exposures, north, central, south, I then said, now, how do you understand this phrase, the land of milk and honey? And I won't take the time to do that here now, but that takes another 5 minutes. But basically, they said, oh, you can't understand that phrase until you know the varying natures and characteristics of the land as you work your way from north to south. It makes that phrase, the land of milk and honey, just come alive. It has full of meaning now. And that's just so true, and it's repeatedly true, and it's always true. It is the Bible and the land. And so that's last night, I'm doing a five-week series on building blocks of biblical context, and building block number one is biblical geography. Because I've had the experience at Preserving Bible Times, people call up who've come back from a year or two of studying in Jerusalem, and they want to buy some of our resources to enhance their teaching. And they reflect with me a little bit, and they say, you know, I walked into the Institute in Jerusalem the first day and said, where are we going to start? Is we going to start with Jeremiah or Deuteronomy? Are we going to start with the Gospels? Are we going to start with Paul? What Bible study are we going to start with? And they say, well, none of that. You're going to start with the course in geography. And half that course is going to be spent outside the building here in the countryside. And the woman or the man, no, you don't understand. I didn't come here to learn biblical geography. I came here to study the Bible. Let's get after it. And the faculty says, precisely. Mm-hmm. If you're ever going to study the Bible, you got to study the land of the Bible.
Yeah, it's bigger than a book. The Bible is bigger than a book.
You will never engage the Bible more unless you engage the world of the Bible more. And then, you know, of course, when they're done with their coursework and they come back to the States, and then I'm talking to them, they say, I can't believe I had that perspective, that biblical geography didn't matter. It is ground zero. It is essential. And, you know, that's kind of the bridge that's always going to be out there. How do we get that message, the reality of that, into the norm of the Western Evangelical Church?
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, just a small aside, Doug. You got me addicted to Daniel Silva's books, and and Gabriel Alon in them. And I'm towards the end of The Fallen Angel right now, and they're describing the approaches to Jerusalem, the Kidron Valley, the and all of the areas around there, the way that, you know, when you drive in from when you go to Jerusalem from the west, that the city seems to float, and all these descriptions in this fiction book, and I'm having a difficult time seeing all that stuff because you've planted these ideas in my head, that I really can't understand what's going on in the Bible until I actually step on the land. And I would say, and I can't understand what Daniel Silva's talking about until I step on the land either.
Yeah, one of the fascinating things about the way Jerusalem is positioned on the central ridge is no matter whether you approach Jerusalem from the west, the east, the north, or the south, you have to go up to get to Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. And that gives rise to the Psalms of Ascent that the pilgrims would sing in the first century as they would come from all around the Eastern Mediterranean basin to go to the major festivals. And the major Psalms of Ascent are Psalms 121, 127, and 128. The biggest ascent takes place if you're a pilgrim and you've come down the Jordan Valley rift from, say, Damascus, and you finally get to Jericho. You're 1,100 feet below sea level, and now you have to go up to Jerusalem, and you're going to go up alongside what's known as the Wadi Kelt. It's like a miniature Grand Canyon kind of thing. And on the southern rim of this wadi, of this dry riverbed, which is a deep canyon, is the old Roman road. And so you now have to get yourself from 1,100 feet below sea level to 2,800 feet above sea level, where Jerusalem is. That's almost a 4,000-foot upage. Mm-hmm. Okay? And so the pilgrims would walk that 4,000 feet elevation. Took them more than a day. And when they finally got to the top of the Mount of Olives, because they had come from the east side of the Mount of Olives, they'd crest on the Mount of Olives, and they'd look down on the Kidron Valley, and across it they'd see Temple Mount, and centered in that Temple Mount was the temple itself. It was a sunny day, bathed in the glory of the sun. And they would erupt into what's now known as the Hallel Psalms, the Psalms of Arrival, Psalms 113 to 118. So what's really fun, among other things, is to just immerse yourself in first the Psalms of Ascent and then the Psalms of Arrival. If you're familiar with the terrain and the topography in the view of what that not only looks like, but you actually have a feel for what that would have been like, it's just another way that the Bible and the land come together.
And you've just described the route that Jesus would have taken going to that final Passover for him.
Yes, because he came up from Jericho. That's where he spent time with Zacchaeus just a week before. And then he did that fascinating teaching in the courtyard of Zacchaeus's home on a nobleman whose slaves, and then the parable of the minas. It's a very Greco-Roman motif, which is fascinating all by itself, but it sets the stage for Passion Week at the same time. So, yep, he went up the Wadi Kilt on that southern Roman road from 1,100 feet below sea level to 2,800 feet above sea level himself. Psalms of Ascent. I wonder how many times he recited and sang Psalms 121, 127, and 128 with his disciples as they made that last journey to Passover.
I want to mention that many of the resources we're talking about are available to you and your church from Preserving Bible Times. If you'd like to kind of scope it out, I invite you to check out the website, preservingbibletimes.org. You can click on it on our website there over on the right-hand side of our homepage at brokenroadradio.com is the Preserving Bible Times, well, kind of a logo, an icon there. Click on that. You can take a look at it. Really, it's a gorgeous website. You can sign up for Doug's monthly newsletter that he calls Reflections. Sometimes it comes out more than once a month. It's free, comes to you via email. And do you still have that 3D map of Israel available?
I had two of them in my left and right hand last night as I was teaching biblical geography.
Well, there isn't a church library that should be without that map, or several of them, and the DVD series of the overflight of Israel, the videotaping of that, just to aid your pastor and to make available to congregants to take out and aid their own Bible studies and small groups. So just a thought there. PreservingBibleTimes.org is the website. And Doug, I know you got to get off to a teaching session here, so we'll let you go. We're grateful for your time, as always, today.
And one more website now to take a look at is instituteofbiblicalcontext.com.
That's right. Take a look at that.
A whole separate website just for that conference.
instituteofbiblicalcontext.com. Toyota.com. Okie doke. Doug, travel safely. Have a great session today. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. Shalom, shalom.
Shalom, Doug.